Welcome to Idle Redhead, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
You don't want to take four.
At your leisure.
Hey, I'm Lyle.
I'm Chris. Oh, damn it.
I am also Chris.
I'm Yujiro.
And for the rest of the podcast, Chris number one will be going by Wayne, just to help people distinguish between the two.
Yes, yes. It's going to confuse everyone more. Yeah. Cool.
So this is a podcast being broadcast, I guess, if the internet is broadcasting, from Kobe, Japan. So that's the city that's not Tokyo.
Ooh, Kobe, yeah! Got it, oh, yes!
All right, obviously, when I say, please don't do that in the podcast, that's going to mean nothing. So we're just doing a podcast about... games and the gamer life. I guess our hook, our spin, if you will, is that we're doing it from Japan, as I mentioned. But I guess, like, what's it like to be a foreign gamer in Japan or a Japanese gamer in Japan?
Actually the Japanese guy.
If you didn't guess by the name Yujiro.
Yeah. That was not one of the Chris's.
So, yeah. What's new with you guys?
I got to see Walking Dead. Walking Dead started on cable.
Oh, cool.
So that's a bit of a bonus in that.
Yeah, I heard about that once or twice before.
Yeah, but I it's kind of cool though. It's only like about a week or two behind the States, so that's a little unusual, considering, like, for example, like Mentalist or whatever just finished season one in Japan.
It's about not watching that much TV. How long do you usually have to wait for a series to come over?
It depends. Yeah, it could be like a couple of years, or it could be a few months.
Yeah, what, Lost is about to open its last season now over here.
I think they finished. I think they're they're re-airing it and just really pumping it.
Oh crap! I gotta get to the video store.
Japanese cable really gives it like a debut number one, number two, number three. Catch it again. This time dubbed. This time with subtitles.
Well, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you.
Yeah, but I'm kind of surprised that Walking Dead would be a choice to. I don't know. So zombies, I didn't see that as particularly a Japanese thing.
You don't get many zombies, but that said, like Resident Evil series was a huge hit over here.
Yeah, but that's based on a video.
Biohazard.
Well, it's huge because they made it. Yeah, Biohazard. Yeah. So
yeah, I think that accounts for its popularity.
Mm. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, I've just finished episode two.
Cool.
Other than that, I don't know. Did you guys hear about the May trains?
May trains?
It's like, May cafes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you can order a drink and be served by somebody dressed up as a maid. That somebody's not always a woman. So imagine that this cafe is on a track. So you combine the two... geek loves of Japan, maids and trains. Yeah. Okay. All in one package.
I'm actually surprised this hasn't occurred before.
Yeah, when you do it, it's like, wow. It's like,
I don't know, like the train geeks and the maid geeks, they don't really seem to go together.
But they don't exactly rumble.
Man, is that a fight going on over there? Oh yeah, that's just the train and the maid.
Get your wheels off my train. I've had enough of these goddamn maids on this goddamn train.
And children don't ride free. No, seriously, children have to pay 3,000 yen, or like $30, to ride on the train.
And well, adults?
And yeah, how much is an adult?
Or is that like 3,500 or something? Oh. 15 minutes. Yeah. Wow. Well, it's kind of odd, though, like get the kids started early on a fetish.
But then, like, the train thing is not for that. Like, I know a lot of guys will take their kids, like, out to the station just to hang out, to look at trains.
Yeah, the number of kids I've seen, like, standing on the platform with their cell phone or digital camera taking a picture of the train as it comes into the station.
More power to them.
Yeah. I think I've ever seen that.
I do you ride the train? Because I see at least two. I see at least two every day.
Actually, you walk between stations, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good point.
That's probably why you don't see it.
You're really bringing that Japanese touch. <laughs> <laughs> Rice? Why? I don't think people eat a lot of rice.
Actually, I don't eat that much rice. I eat oatmeal.
Does calorie make that rice? So, that starts next month. So that'd probably be pretty popular. It's in Tokyo.
Of course.
No surprise there, yeah.
So.
Cool.
How about you guys?
I unfortunately didn't do all that much, what with the freelance work. My impossible dream challenge of painting all those miniatures is not that much farther than where it was last.
How many miniatures you got done?
The same number as I
got. Okay, cool.
Just like War Machine?
Yeah.
Or Hordes?
Yeah. I did about 2 hours of painting today, and that was it. Unfortunately.
Well, hey, that's 2 hours done. That's good, I suppose. Maybe?
Meh.
Okay, right.
Well, like I said, it's kind of weird. Like, once you kind of tell yourself you have to do something, it becomes a chore and you don't want to.
Hmm. That's just like miniature gaming in general.
Well,
once you open that box, it becomes a chore.
Like the ones in the book.
Yeah.
Fair enough. How do I play with you?
Yeah, I suppose that's the appeal of pre-painted miniature games, but
until you take them out of the box.
Yeah, until you take them out of the box, you're like, man.
Oh. Yeah. What if I didn't want that sword all bent?
Yeah. Or it's like, why is his eye down underneath his chin? Who painted this? God.
Why is his face just all flesh? Uniform flesh.
How about you, Yuge?
Nothing new. Gym. Yoga.
Cool. How's your yoga routine doing? How many hours today?
Let's see, 1 hour in the morning, 2 in the afternoon. Yeah.
Riveting.
Wow. So are you, like, really flexible now?
I wish.
All right.
Yeah.
One of these days.
Yeah. Give me about 6 more months.
And Chris?
Let's see. Gaming related. I'm about 200 pages in.
Well, we're off that anyway.
Or so, you know, I mean, the topic of the podcast and all. I tried to do it, but I couldn't. I'm about 200 pages into the Dresden Files book.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, so we'll be starting that next year.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna run like a basic Fate game first, and then maybe we'll try Dresden.
Oh, that's what I meant. We're doing that Weird War.
Yes.
Exactly. With the Fate system.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Or a skewed version of it, but we'll talk about that more later.
So, only 200 pages in because it's dense or
boring? I didn't have all that much time. You know, we gamed yesterday, so that took up a whole day, and then Saturday was the spend with girlfriend day, so, yeah.
Hey, you also spent part of that day with us.
Shh. Don't tell her that. But I brought her along. So.
Yeah, she was there.
It's like, I think she knows, you know?
Yeah.
Why are they in the bedroom?
Oh, man.
Who said Wayne could bring a camera?
Oh, God, why was it me who brought a camera?
Why am I showing up without a camera? I'm unprepared. Oh, I didn't know filming was allowed.
I can't recommend that.
All right.
Well, just to start us off, why don't we just maybe, I don't know, let our listeners know, or if we have any, how we got started, like, in gaming? Chris, how'd you get started in gaming?
Okay.
Was your gateway game?
It was D&D, of course. No surprise there. I bought the Red Book off of a kid at school who probably stole it from somebody else, and I know this because he later on stole my Magic cards. Yeah, that was it. From the first time I opened the book, I was hooked, and then I just played that throughout all of my formative years, along with a few trips into Rifts and Cyberpunk and a few other games. Yeah, but mainly I'm a D&D baby.
Did you manage to get the rest of the box set from it?
Nope, never did.
No?
Well, like by the time I got, like I actually got it. I don't know what age I was, but it was well after the Red Box had come out. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, I wasn't born when it came out, but
Okay.
But, so like I think is D&D was well into second edition, maybe.
I feel
maybe
old.
AD&D, yeah. Mm. But like I actually didn't get into AD&D for a long time. I stayed on D&D because there was like kind of the elementary beginner set.
Yeah.
It, so I played that for a really long time.
Oh, okay.
Before eventually moving on.
Yeah, I think I had that one.
You didn't like sell your dice one at a time. Give you like the D4 for free.
Yeah, right.
The first taste free, man.
Yeah, right. I love him up to D20, the D12.
20 bucks.
Oh, man.
I'd like to do more than 4 points of damage.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
It's going to cost
like
you.
Yeah, a buck aside.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. I can't wait till I get that D20.
They're D2. No, but actually, I'm kind of thankful to that guy because he got me out of Magic when he did. Like, it was still early on, and I didn't lose all the money that I could have. So
I get by stealing your stuff.
Yeah. In a way.
Did you think like sketch. Gaming stores were like you know, car trunks?
See what I have. Going down to the gaming store, you know, in the alleyway.
Well, I got a D&D rule book.
Yeah, I can see
and
him
a
like
Tunnels and Trolls monster creature manual.
I can see him whispering to the guy behind the counter. Oh, excuse me, you got any D&D? The guy opens up the side of his trench coat, all these pockets full of dice and like those glass beads. Yeah, what do you want?
You want some miniatures? I got your miniatures right here
and some rocks of crack. Yeah, you're not into. You're not okay. All right.
Just the dice.
What if I wrote some numbers on this rock?
How about you guys then?
Lyle, you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. No, I actually started like, God, I feel a little bit older. Well, I am older. Because the Redbox, I started with the Redbox as well, but I can't say that I started like after it came out, like a decade later.
When did it come out, do you know? It was 70-something?
Yeah, late 70s?
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
I think.
I don't know.
Or early 80s. We'll edit it out if we're wrong. Yeah. So it'll be another person's voice going, when did it come out? Well,
I think it came out in 92.
Yeah, but, you know, I was really young at the time, so, like, I didn't bother learning any of the rules. You just gave yourself 25 stats across the board, level 36.
I love those days.
So I, you know, it's like, I guess I got me started in collecting games, but not really playing games. So it wasn't, after that, I like went into another collection, comics. And I just did that, just collecting comics and reading comics. I was really into that. And I go into like, in high school.
Yeah.
I go into my like chemistry class before it started, and these guys were playing Axis and Allies. On their lunch hour, so I figured, like, wow, they might
play Axis and Allies in school.
I played Risk in school with a bunch of my friends.
Risk, I can see because the board is kind of on the smaller side, but Axis and Allies is huge. You got like 3 billion miniatures that go on it and everything.
I think the chemistry teacher was a gamer,
so
he like I think he
had a table saved in the back.
Yeah, something like that, or you know, like every chemistry class has got where all the chemicals are in the back.
Yeah.
I don't know if he put it there, but oh, this smells.
Sir, my Germans are melting.
But I mean, they were clearly the gamers of of my high school. So I asked them. I said, "Do you guys have any superhero games?" Mm-hmm. And rather than out and out, you know, just saying no, they swarmed me and said, "No, but we got this game. That's really cool." And it turned out to be Riffs. Right then and there, like they I don't know where they were keeping the book, but they pulled out the book from somewhere and they opened it up and it goes, "Oh, you could join and we could play." I said, "Yeah, that sounds pretty cool." And they said, "Oh, you can make a character." And I, you know, just looking at the pictures, I picked like a military special, coalition military specialist. And they didn't bother to tell me that they were kind of like the Nazis of the game, and they were actually like the Rebel Alliance. So that was a bit awkward, but I guess I should have known from
Jones
the skullhead.
Jones and Wilson.
Yeah.
For Klimt.
Yeah. We didn't tell you were actually going to have to. The beginning of the adventure was us kidnapping you and beating you until you were lent to work with us. So that's basically how the adventure started. It didn't last very long.
Wow.
But, you know, the armor should have been a giveaway. You know, it's like, you know, skull heads generally are not the good guys. Despite that kind of that start, no, I was really hooked on gaming and then went from Torg to Vampire and stuff like that. And then back to D&D.
Cool. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
All right, I guess I'll go next then. I actually didn't start with D&D. I kind of started with the adventure board games, most notably HeroQuest.
Oh, yeah, my brother had that.
Yeah. It was a, you know, kind of a basic adventure board game. And from there, I kind of went on to miniature wargaming. And I did that for a while. And, yeah, then eventually found D&D, which by then was AD&D 2nd Edition. So that's kind of what I started with. So I actually kind of paralleled the evolution of RPGs themselves. Because RPGs kind of grew out of miniature wargaming. Where, you know, The Lord of the Rings came out in paperback, and then, you know, miniature wargaming became fantasy wargaming, and then kind of grew into, well, what if we controlled one guy each as opposed to an army, and that's kind of where D&D started.
Hmm. And you.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay.
I mean, sure, it started a decade before you were
born. Well, yeah.
But
yeah. 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 So you paralleled a decade after.
Well, I mean,
oh, it's going to be the tie in the Lord of the Rings paperback. I think he was the paperback.
Guggenheimer invented the printing press.
Yeah, so, you know, the hippies got really into Lord of the Rings in the 60s, really revived that. That's kind of like me.
Right, that's a different time in history. A similar path, thank you much. I can go back to the original introduction I did.
No, we're good. We're good.
All right, then.
How about you, Huge?
Started with console gaming. NES, Super Mario.
Sweet.
And from there, it was pretty much console gaming until, like, junior high-ish. And that's when, like, I started playing. It's like, what? Keep it brief?
To the mic.
Oh, to the mic?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm thinking, so, yeah. And then went to this homebrew system, which I played at church with my friend. And from there, I went to AD&D and Rifts.
Awesome.
And then pretty much no gaming for a while, except, like, PC gaming, console gaming. Mm.
Sorry, I stopped listening after played in church.
Can I ask, was this a religiously themed RPG that you played in church?
No. Yeah. We had to hide from my friend's parents.
I'm sorry, that's what you did, or that's what the game was about?
Yeah, that's what you did. So you passed time while hiding from his parents.
Didn't you, like, sit next to your parents in church?
Nah.
They
tried to sit in, like, the corner or the back where they can, like, see us.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, rolled dice on the, like, chairs and all that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a bit different from...
Yeah, cool. You got to tell us all about that that game one of these days.
I don't remember much about it.
As much as you do.
Huh.
But that's for a later episode.
Turns out it's craps.
Yeah.
What's the point of rolling up these characters? All we do is play craps. What is your character playing craps?
Level gambling junkie and an elf.
No, because if it was the original D&D, that would have been his profession, elf.
Mm, yes.
Anyway,
so what are we talking about today?
Well, figured that since it's gamers in Japan, we'd actually talk about basically how games treat Japan, or like Japanese gaming. Not necessarily like not the games that Japanese people play per se. But, you know, like, Japanese.
Yeah,
I'm Japanese, but...
Oh, come on.
Okay,
you don't
so
eat
what
rice
games
every
do
day.
Japanese play? PlayStation, Xbox.
They, Japanese people apparently don't ride the train anymore.
Or eat rice.
We're not really giving us
yeah,
anything.
Yeah,
like,
fair enough.
There goes our
all I know
shtick.
Is... It's a nation of yoga mat people. Isn't that India? No. Totally Japan. Sorry. So, yeah, just to start us off, I mean, we actually run three games right now. We have a vampire game going on, a changeling game going on, and D&D 4th edition.
The requisite.
Yeah. So why don't any of our games have a Japanese theme to them?
Oh, wow, jumping right to that one. All right.
Yeah.
All right. I thought this was point number three. But
okay. Oh, didn't you get the memo? If you want to move this on the agenda, man, you can raise that. But that's number four on the agenda.
Oh, okay,
moving
right.
stuff on the agenda.
All right. I'll start by saying I think...
Why is Changeling set in Los Angeles? Why isn't it set in Tokyo or not? Or Osaka or Kobe? I think the answer is obvious why it's not set in Kobe, but...
Well, all right, there's kind of two reasons, I think. One, is, like, sort of subconsciously,
yeah,
people do what is normal, and if you've lived most of your life in one country, if you're sort of a native of one country,
right.
I mean, it kind of stands to reason that that's the place you know best, and that's kind of where most of your things happen,
right?
Or most of your things are set. Yeah, I've lived in Japan for 5 years, and I could have run it here.
Yeah.
But then, I guess, personally, I'm a detail-oriented person.
Yeah, we know.
Oh, God.
So anyway, so, like, if I set a game in Japan, I would be worried about, obviously, making, like, mistakes.
Yeah.
That kind of screwed up the setting, and then, you know, people would say, oh, well, you know, that wouldn't happen, or...
I see what you're saying, yeah.
You know.
Too close to home.
Yeah, exactly. It's too close to home, and even though Changeling is slightly fantastic, I don't know, I still like having that kind of core of reality.
Okay, like, you can dictate the reality.
Yeah.
That's cool. Hmm. That's understandable.
Other people have thoughts on the why it's why vampire is set in Detroit, or why...
Trick question, because actually a part of Detroit where vampire is set, actually the subway is all Japan. Mm. All those pictures from the subway are Japan.
Cool.
Yeah. Hmm. I was looking for, sewer pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We'll get to the subway later. When we get that in the game, but when you guys were exploring the sewers of Detroit, you were actually exploring Japanese sewers.
Okay,
they just look cooler. Mm. When I went on to Google and did the images, and I was like, oh, that's a Japanese.
There was the one picture with a worker down there like looking at a thing, and I looked at him, and I thought like that looks like a Japanese worker's uniform. Does it as a thought passion through my mind?
Oh yeah,
But like I didn't actually think
with that the kind of like. That odd blue that you don't find in the real world. Mm.
Cool.
Yeah, so that actually does. But yeah, like kind of like Wayne is. Yeah, I didn't set it in like you guys are from the States, so I didn't set it in any city that you would be familiar with. So I set it in Detroit, partly because no one was familiar with it, so I could kind of make stuff up.
Yeah.
I've actually never been to Detroit, but and then I had seen this thing on Time Magazine, where these European guys, they went and like took all these pictures of Detroit and how it's like decayed and stuff like that. So I thought, well, that's perfect.
Yeah,
kind of fits the setting.
I guess you wouldn't want to make it. You know, I could have set it in Tokyo because none of you guys lived there, and I had lived there, so maybe I knew more about that. But then, I don't know. I also wanted to have like different, you know, make a very less homogenous kind of society. Mm-hmm. So you're a lot freer on the images you can choose when you present people. So if you're not choosing like consistently Japanese faces for the pictures that I have for the NPCs, then you kind of have to have a reason. Are you in like that foreigner, that Gaijin bubble?
Uh-huh.
You know, if you have all these white faces or black faces or whatever, you know, what are you? You know, you have to have like a extra story, whereas you can just have like, you know, a lot of black faces, a lot of white faces, Indian, Asian, things like that, Native American, if I ever bothered to insert them into Detroit. Put that on my to-do list. But nobody questions that. Like the police officer can be any color. I just can get that actor that I want to represent that personality. The sorority that Wayne's character is currently going through, I can just pick just random hot women.
Yeah.
Without having them all to be random hot Japanese women. Like that.
That's very cool. Interesting. Yeah, I had not thought of that until you just said it. And it's kind of exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because we live here, we would see like how many foreigners and how many different faces that you would see, particularly in Tokyo. Mm. But I guess like the image, overwhelming, it's still like 97% Japanese.
Foreigners are less than 1%.
Less than 1%.
So, don't we make up like more than 12% of like the workforce?
Well, maybe it's like a crime rate.
Never heard of that. Well, probably the member. I didn't say what workforce.
Well, let's just do Google Yujiro.
So
Chris, why aren't we playing samurai or ninjas? We were perhaps playing in the widest fantasy world.
I thought I claimed that. Oh, the widest fantasy. All right.
Yeah,
we're playing in the widest Los Angeles.
Very, very white Los Angeles.
There is one coffee girl in my campaign, but
that's latte.
It's I guess an overly simplistic answer, but it had been what, like 5 years since I gamed, like when I hooked up with you guys. So I didn't want to. I just kind of wanted to ease myself back into it. So I just took a nice vanilla, no pun intended, campaign and D&D.
Yeah,
I can see that because when we tried to, because Wayne and I started playing like. 3.5
yeah.
before you join in with the and suggest a fourth edition. And yeah, you want to play the classic adventure because it's been a while since you have played D&D,
exactly.
And you're like, you don't need to push yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you just want to do like the class. You know, we're actually playing Temple of Elemental Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had like just gotten through the doors of the temple. No, we were still like in the courtyard.
No, you're down the stairs.
All right,
you're down the stairs. After that gripping fight with those rats.
That was the snake that did it.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, I think, yeah, but it kind of comes back to, like, the normalcy thing that I said at the beginning. Like, it's kind of difficult to judge since we are all, well, not all, okay.
Yeah.
The majority of us are, you know, Caucasian males, but...
I'm sorry, you eat oatmeal for breakfast, man.
Yeah.
You're whiter than I am.
But, like, it's kind of interesting. Like, in high school, I ran a West End D6 Star Wars game for my friends.
Oh, yeah.
And like at the time, my four closest friends, we were all of mixed ethnicity. Though they looked much more African American than I did. Like you would think they were African American. Yeah, I know.
Yes.
I look Caucasian. So like I was the game master, and they made up their characters. Yeah, I'm the same skin tone as you. Yeah.
You might even be whiter than me.
So anyway, like I looked at their character pictures because we were all kind of illustrators. And all of their characters looked black. And, like, I didn't kind of realize it at the time.
Yeah.
But looking back now, like, that's kind of what was normal to them. Of course, they defaulted to an African-American-looking character.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of what...
Because your school had a lot of...
No. I mean, like, they were all African-American. Pretty much.
Nobody said they were mixed.
Yeah, they were mixed, but yeah. Obviously, like
meaning one of their
parents, like me, was African American.
No, no,
oh,
that's what
oh,
I meant. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what I meant.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant a mixed group.
No.
Wait,
no, each
of your parents is African.
Yes. So anyway, the point is, yeah, that's kind of like all of their family looked African American. You know, they were mostly in like African American circles, so of course that's what was. That was normal, and sort of without thinking about it, you default to what is normal for you.
But that's like not to sound like a antagonist or something, but shut up. actually,
sure, you want to finish that sentence?
The reason I was laughing just a minute ago, like in a campaign I'm running right now, the bad guys are a group of like evil priests called the Red Hand, and so I figured for the symbol it'd be like a red. Like blood print on a white kind of a cloak thing.
Right.
When we started up the game, we actually had a black guy from England in the campaign, and like I remember you guys walk down to the cave and like you see all the priests and they're all in white robes and like everybody just kind of stops, looks at him, looks back at me. no, not like that.
Did we? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Well,
yeah, we kind of did. And then
afterwards, the jokes about the Ku Klux Klan came out. And then,
yeah.
Because I didn't feel really guilty when we were doing the racial profiling in your game.
Yeah,
no, I didn't.
Are evil.
I didn't. Yeah.
Clearly he is, and it turned out
yeah.
to be correct. Clearly this guy has something to do with it because he's the Tefling.
Yeah.
That was a little debate.
Of course you forgot about the other one that wasn't. But
well,
anyway, like
yeah.
going beyond that, like it's interesting that you're saying how you're...
other one?
the Chamberlain in the castle.
Yeah.
It's also a Tefling. Anyway, what was I saying?
Something about my...
I hate you all.
I can't hear you from the hole you dug.
You want your shovel back? No, like you're saying like how you wanted to, use, like something that felt normal to you. That's why you placed it in the States.
No, oh yeah, not that it felt normal to
and
you.
You just wanted to bring your clan roots.
A matter
yeah.
of familiarity.
Sure, yeah, no, it's like
I'm just gonna ignore that.
I think it happens. I think it happens subconsciously.
Well, but like it's interesting because you've lived in Philadelphia
mm-hmm.
and Kobe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And never in LA. So
no.
like the two places there seem more familiar than LA would. But you're saying you went with that because of a sense of familiarity.
Well, no, I went with the States as opposed to Japan because I was more familiar with the States, and it's exactly the same reason Lyle set Vampire in Detroit.
Something familiar, but not familiar.
No one, I think apart from Lyle, had been to Los Angeles ever, so it's still...
And I start rubbing that in at
yeah,
the first
yeah,
game.
Yeah. It's,
I have
It's still real, but like no one calls me out if I put a landmark in the wrong place. Nobody says that's not there.
Well, you were using Google Maps.
Never,
like,
yeah. First, yeah, placed your wrong landmark ever.
I don't think
you had the walking distance down to the minute.
Yeah. But I said that's because I'm a detail-oriented person.
15 minutes. What if I walk slow?
I do try and put things in the right place.
Oh,
but
God, yes.
You know, like, when Lyle's character is looking for a hardware store or a drugstore or whatever, I can just say yes, there's one on this block, rather than
yeah. See,
you know?
Yeah, I'd be the opposite because I'll just put it wherever.
Well, no,
yeah.
that's what I did.
Yeah. I'm just like, I can't imagine anybody like just giving you shit about that. No, there's just no hardware store.
Well,
there.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
not that anybody would give me shit, but it's kind of like, as a detail oriented person, I would kind of.
Actually, I take that back. We'll give you shit for anything.
Yeah, I know. obviously.
Well, then, yeah.
I'll give you shit for being detailed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You stopped using the Google Maps after that that one session.
Yeah.
So would you guys be interested in putting a game in that? What, he's not running a game.
No, I was going to. Yeah, but I think he would be a good person to start with the answer with.
Would you
set a game
and
in
if
Japan?
You did, like, what kind of elements would you put
in? Well, it's kind of funny because Yujiro's characters are all white.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yeah. When I was writing up these notes, I thought
that. I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
At least the pictures you have chosen.
See?
Yeah, the pictures you have chosen.
Well, I mean the halfling is kind of like a, well, he's white. He's a white little pirate. And it's a drawing, but yeah. The ones you chose, the actors that you chose to represent yourself are.
Well, I mean,
are whiter and taller than you. More masculine. I don't know. What's that saying? George is white. Your character
George is
white.
Not dance guy.
No, I'm just.
But he doesn't do yoga.
You're all man. You are all man. So I mean, that's interesting. Well, I didn't know we were going to get into the racial thing, but I've only played white characters.
I only use that to kind of back up my whatever you see as normal is kind of what you default to until someone asks you a question, and then you say, oh well, why did I do that, or why didn't I make it a woman, or why didn't I play another race?
That's interesting because I have before played other races. And I don't mean like elf and dwarf. No, I mean like other human races.
Okay.
All right. Better save for a
minute. No, like I didn't want to go too far into like building
before I keep digging my hole further.
Yeah, I can barely see you. Right.
But yeah, how about that? Would you guys put a game in Japan?
I honestly,
I've already put the sewers in Japan, but
well, yeah,
but like,
no,
they
I'm just,
in
I'm
Japan,
kidding, I'm
yeah,
kidding.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know, because
I'm gonna pick that knit.
you know something. I would put elements in Japan. I think there's some really striking images, and I think maybe sometimes when you get too close, it's almost the opposite of what you're saying, Wayne, with what's normal for you. But sometimes you can get too close, and it strips away the allure, the mystique.
Yep.
And I think because, yeah, you live in Japan, I have some games here that, you know, have all these Japanese elements. They're all, I believe, all American games by American writers. Canadian. Actually, it's a Canadian game here. Heavy Gear.
Oh.
Yeah, they're from Canada. I think they're from Montreal. But yeah, actually what's good about these games is that, yeah, the people have embraced the mystique, and they're pulling the elements that they want from Japan. They're just mixing it up. So, like, Battletech here has got science fiction. Yeah, it's in the future. But they've just taken... They've decided to, like, go back to the, you know, 1600s.
Okay.
Or the 1500s of Japan and take that, because that's interesting to them. And I think maybe because they are removed from Japan, they'll play with it. They'll take the stereotypes, like, unabashedly. Whereas we might, I don't know, feel a bit more self-conscious about having ninjas in the modern, you know, in a corporate world like you have in Torg here, and it's just like, you know, cyber samurais with ninjas and evil corporate high lords and stuff like that.
Really, lots of different adjectives added to ninja and samurai.
Yeah. So the corporate ninja salaryman.
Or the cyber ninja.
But we see like these salarymen on the train and passed out at these, well, not usually. not on the train. So, I don't know, it can be almost like mundane to like just set it just in Japan, but I would take like temples, like you take a picture of Kiyomizu Temple, mm-hmm. You know, but not even like going to Kiyomizu Temple, taking that picture where it looks like it's on like a cliff with all these, like how are these trees all around it, because it looks like once you get onto that veranda it just drops down like miles, and when you actually go there you could, I don't know, you probably break a couple legs jumping down, but it's not quite the drop that I expected. But that one iconic image is, you could build almost more around that than actually going there. And then when you look and you see the soba shop, it's not even a good soba shop. And it strips it away, and all the people and things like that. Some things, though, I mean, when you walk and they make you take off your shoes. On and it's all wood, and you're outside, but you're walking in your stocking feet on polished wood and things like that. And I think that tactile sense, that's really good. So even if you came to Japan and did a quick tour, a bus tour, and you just went to all the temples and that, and did your tea ceremony and things like that, I think you would actually come away with as much as someone who's lived here 5-10 years.
Yeah. No, I definitely,
because you would just
agree.
Pull, that was cool. Yeah. And that's all you would remember, and you wouldn't have any, you wouldn't be jaded or anything like that.
Yeah, like the cool elements wouldn't be diluted by sort of the more mundane stuff that happens on an obviously day-to-day basis. That kind of
going to work.
Yeah, going to work.
Like Cthulhu Tech here, I mean, they don't miss a beat on like Japanese anime and manga. They've got your Robotech covered. They've got your Guyver covered. They've got your big-eyed people. I mean, they have a race that kind of looks like elves, but really just looks like anime characters. And they say, yeah, well, they're another race.
Huh.
That's why their eyes are so huge. So, yeah, it's like they really embrace that, and you're like, oh, yeah, I've read. But then you see all the different, you know, comic books that you have here about baseball teams. And
eating ramen.
Amen. Stuff like that. It's funny, Simon translated some of the things he was telling us. So.
So,
I guess my answer would probably be no, but. And maybe only because, yeah, I guess after living here for 5 years. I mean, I guess this sort of weakens my no, but. But, like, Japan's kind of become sort of, like, mundane. You know, it's just almost kind of like any other place.
Besides the fantastic boroughs of Los Angeles, huh?
Well, yeah, obviously. But...
yeah, but we don't live... You know, it's like when you actually walk on Hollywood Boulevard, that's a bit of a letdown.
Yeah.
You know, when you see that, like, and you go, oh, that's the Viper Room. Uh-huh. And you're like, oh, yeah. Oh, this is the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Mm. And you're like, man, who did this guy piss off to get his star in front of the porn store? You know, it's like.
But on the other hand, like, I was very impressed by
Detroit.
But on
the other hand, table has to pop and he's got the star.
Like, Detroit, when I went there, you know, like, I'd seen pictures and it looked like a piece of shit, but oh my god, it is really shit.
So it lived up to the...
No, it surpassed his expectations.
It blew me away.
With its crackiness, apparently.
Oh, they're redoing the harbor.
No, so. Like, it's, yeah, that's, I mean... I've been through some bad neighborhoods in Detroit, and they take bad neighborhood to a new level. But it's not like it's a shit city. Just imply that it's a shit city.
Well, like,
I'm going back in my hole now.
Yeah, all right.
So back to Japan.
No, I was going to say, I think you'd be kind of... I think you'd be hard-pressed to do a Japanese game without using the stereotypes as these games that you... have brought did.
See, I disagree there. That's okay. Like, I actually do want to make a game and put it here in Japan, and I want to use Vampire specifically for it, and I want to bring in a lot of the elements of mundane Japan, but I want to stay away from
stereotyping
you from not only stereotypes, but like I want to embrace some stereotypes, but I want to get away from the more generic stereotypes that are popular in the States, like the samurai and ninja. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
Out of curiosity, what would those be? Because, like, when I was writing up the notes, like, that is what Western culture kind of knows. For better or worse, that's what they know. If you don't include those things, the game will not feel like it's set in Japan.
I
I guess maybe he means like playing, really? Running it for us.
Well, no, yeah. Fair enough, running it for us. Exactly. But I'm curious, like, what?
Really, despite not having seen a real ninja or samurai, do you not feel like you live in Japan?
Well, I feel like I live in Japan because I can't read 99% of the things in front of my face every day, you know. So I definitely feel like I'm in Japan. But I'm just curious.
Or illiterate.
Yeah, or illiterate. Yeah, or that too. So I'm just curious what you would put into this setting, even on a day-to-day basis, yeah. to make it not feel like any other city.
I'm curious too.
Well, that's the thing, though. Like, if putting in mundane stuff makes it feel mundane, which by definition is like any other place, mm-hmm. but some of the things that I would like emphasize about Japan would be like things like... taking an ancient version of like the shogunate or the samurai system and kind of applying it to like a more modern setting,
like BattleTech, like the Draconis Combat.
I haven't read BattleTech to know, but maybe.
Yeah.
And, but like Japanese as a society has a really hierarchical level to it.
Yeah.
It's something that American society doesn't have, and it's something that I think would work really well with the vampire. Because, you know, like, the way the vampires work, like, the Invictus, there's, you know, you always say yes to your boss, you never say no to him kind of thing. And that, a lot of times, goes against what Americans feel. You know, I want to be my own guy, I don't want to do whatever this guy's telling me. But in a Japanese setting, a Japanese person, that's rather natural. You know, in a company, you don't say no to your boss as much mm-hmm. as you do in America.
Okay.
I think that's changing.
I agree.
I mean, that could almost be like a bubble or an 80s
and that could be
60s, 70s, 80s mentality, but yeah, you could see it less so with younger people now in the office environment. But you basically, like, the Invictus is kind of like a feudal system, and you're saying the Shogunate, that's basically a feudal system.
Yeah, and I think that's something that'd be really interesting to play with, like the people who are more
I guess my point is, like, vampires already got the feudal system because mm-hmm. they have the Invictus, and they're very feudal, and the samurai. I mean, I guess that big stereotype of the samurai, like, people play that up, is they won't say no to their daimyo, or their they will do whatever,
right?
Things
but
like
I
that.
Think
even reading the book Shogun,
I think I'm more just focusing on like the living the hierarchical aspect of, as, instead of the swordplay.
I guess maybe the two sides, because then if you have like a very, like, I find people like throw themselves into like a particular hobby or obsession. We're talking about like maids and trains,
yeah.
before, but yeah, like a lot of that is people like breaking away from like, you know, their 9-to-5 job, which tends to be like a 9-to-9 job, things like that. So when they do have the free time, then they really let it out. So maybe that could be something to bring, is that when you go to that club versus LA, I mean, this gets real freaky. But then again, I think that's just really extrapolating, because really when you go to a club here, it's not all that different than anywhere else.
But that's actually something else that I wanted to get into, is like some of these hot people who put their entire lives into their hobby, you know, like the maid people, they collect figurines of maids, they have costumes of maids, they go to vending machines and buy uniforms that were worn by maids before.
I was going to say little fucking maid figures, but alright.
Yeah, like that kind of thing, like those, but there's a lot of them, some of them are really popular, some aren't, but some of the larger ones, you could incorporate those into like their own vampire groups like that. Like I imagined...
they dress as maids? Collect
figurines?
I didn't see that connection either, and I was thinking, so the vampires dress as maids
actually,
too.
That's one of them, like a person whose collection spans over 100 years. The one that I actually wrote down that I thought would be cool was schoolgirls.
They collect schoolgirls?
No, schoolgirls as a group of vampires.
Oh.
I can see
knowing where vampire goes as pretty straight up in Detroit, where it has gone, and we'll talk about going too far in a later episode.
Everyone is looking directly at me.
I could see that.
Absolutely, I agree. I think there is a danger that it could go over the edge with that, but I don't know. It just kind of piqued my interest as something that might be interesting.
I was going to actually go the other way with kind of like. A bit like a cliche, because like, isn't that kind of the in thing now?
Yeah, actually,
the
they're talking about like
schoolgirl
ambassadors.
I saw those. Yeah, ambassadors of cute.
Ambassadors of cute. Yeah, and they go to like Korea,
kawaii culture,
and China, and sadly, it seems to work. Yeah, so I mean that's an just like you have the salary man in the black suit packed, you know, 50 to a train or 100 to a train, yeah. Is also the schoolgirls who the salary man would very much like also to be packed in into those trains with them. But yeah, no, I think that's another iconic image. Interestingly, I don't know how interesting it is, but my image of Japanese schoolgirls before I came here was actually quite chaste.
Really?
Because I actually wasn't terribly interested in Japan before I came. So yeah. My image was the, and you see them now, it turns out they're like junior high school girls with pretty much the bowl cuts and the skirts down to their ankles.
Yeah.
And things. So yeah, I was quite surprised when I came here.
I think I've seen like elementary school girls dressed like that.
Okay, then turns out they're elementary school girls.
No.
Man, but yeah, you haven't seen trains. This is my friend.
That's because you're not looking for them. You're looking for the other ones. I was a little bit surprised, like how risque those uniforms could be.
I guess I was surprised as well, but for like kind of like a different reason. Like watching anime, I assumed that those uniforms you see in anime were exaggerations. Now I said, you know, the people who design that are obviously perverts. And then I came here and I said, no, holy crap.
Well,
art really does imitate life.
Well, they are perverts.
They are perverts. I'm not disputing
that. That breast size is totally...
Okay, fine. I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about the skirt length.
Or how about the hair color and the eye color?
All right, fine, whatever.
Although I did actually meet somebody who was, like had green hair and stuff like that.
Who wasn't, like, cosplaying or whatever?
No, just naturally...
Naturally
endowed
green.
Endowed, and the hair was fake.
Huge eyes
that were red.
One other thing that I wrote down on my list of things here was politeness levels as well. I have no idea how I'd actually incorporate it into a game, but like in Japanese, how when depending on who you're talking to is how what level of politeness you have to use. So like talking down to someone is equivalent to like swearing at them.
I guess. I mean, not.
Actually, Neil Gaiman had... Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, yeah.
Neil Gaiman had an interesting point because he was asked to do the translate. Well, I don't think he was translating, but he was taking the translation and making it... just working on the wording, and he was doing a Princess Mononoke?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the English title?
Princess Mononoke.
Princess.
Yeah.
And he said that there was something like... I think it was soup? And the Japanese was, this tastes like water. And he's like, well, that's not a very big insult. And the translator, no, that's a huge insult to say that tastes like water. And he's like, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is that? And they said, like, oh, it's a 10. And he's like, so he had to translate it into, this tastes like piss.
Yeah.
So, oh, I remember that. I remember that now.
Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah.
So I think that can get into what you're
really
saying.
Yeah. Like, you know, you can ask someone, how are you today? And, like, really piss them off with it.
Yeah. No, I work in a pretty jaded place.
Yeah, I said like
in Japanese, like if you walked up to your boss and said, for example, "Kyomaido rauro," like that's hard shit. That's it's still saying "How are you?" But
yeah, but you can do that in English.
Yeah, I mean,
true, but it's different. In English, you use swear words.
No, in English, you use tone of voice. I would say tone of voice.
Well, any language,
yeah,
that's how humans communicate.
But all right, fine.
They use words, perhaps string them together.
Yeah,
perhaps
yeah,
word.
Not the students I teach. I teach. Yeah, good. Yeah, that would be okay.
The students I teach.
Yeah, no. I was gonna say like that would be interesting, but
yeah, I really don't like.
I think you know. It sounds like you're trying to like reinvent the wheel. Like you're trying to create a new, I don't know, society. But I think again, it gets back to like just pull out generalizations and stereotypes, and then
that's kind of
throw it, mishmash it together.
Okay.
And again, that would get into the samurai and people would like. I think people like just when they think of the samurai, you're like, oh, it's like a samurai culture, but you're not really samurai.
Mm.
You don't have swords and stuff like that. You're in the corporate world, or you're in the future, or it's actually cyberpunk, but. But you're not like rebels. You're all samurai, and then people will kind of instantly get about the stratified society.
Yeah.
They'll get about like, okay, remember, you're talking to your lord. So then they would start to go into their honorifics and stuff like that, and they use
like,
a real high register and real formal language. And I think using that stereotype. So it's
Well, maybe
like
maybe,
like your the extra insight, I don't think actually gives you any advantage.
I think maybe it's just that I'm rebelling against because every freaking one has ninja and samurai. There's so much more to Japan than that. Those two elements.
And oh, okay. Yeah. So what? That's a good point. Is what are some things that you could actually recommend as a not an insider because I don't want to get that
so
sounds a little
read
pretentious.
That off a piece of paper.
No, it's not, I'm reading actually.
Well,
what,
we can't
I'm
all
reading my,
and read it off an iPod like you can. We don't all have iPod touches.
I actually did not read that sentence off the piece of paper. I was reading my next sentence, preparing my next sentence.
All right.
Now I'll sit back and relax and try to.
Okay, so the point was, what would you suggest people put in to make their games Japanese that are not the usual stereotypes?
Dirt.
What?
Dirt. So many of the images that I see out of Japan, like this Nippon Tech and stuff, it's so clean. And I don't mean like the surface of objects.
Chris was complaining about the battle mechs on the cover of Dracoon's Combine.
Yeah, everyone's going to know this book.
Everyone should know this book.
All right, so getting back
a lot of people like battle tech, my friend.
All right. But like,
I've only met one. No, just kidding. Societally, it's, you know, like every country's got good stuff, every country's got bad stuff. But I see so much idolization of Japanese things that they're so cool. Like the samurai, he's honorific, and he would never go against his lord's word. Or like the ninja, you know, a ninja at its base is an assassin, but you still see the honorable, wonderful ninjas in fiction.
So what?
Yeah, I don't see the connection to dirt.
On the opposite.
No, he's saying he basically
dirty it up.
Like he's doing the Star Wars universe versus the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good comparison of what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Not the prequel Star Wars.
No.
Because that kind of shined it up.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. That's why I hated it, but.
Yeah. Put a little spit and polish on that.
Exactly.
I think that's a good point, but I think I would honestly need more. Like, not more dirt, as in. I kind of like.
You're not filthy enough, my
friend.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, yeah. Try not showering for a week. No, I don't see that as an only Japanese thing.
I didn't.
I know you didn't mean it as an only Japanese thing.
You know, again, I think
that
somebody watches Black Rain, and I think when they do the Yakuza, they make them too. If you see like real Yakuza, they're like, they try to shine themselves up a lot, you know, when you see their white cars and things like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, when people dirty it up, everything is then becomes black and they're wearing sunglasses. They're not wearing the punch perms.
But I'm not talking about
punch
looks.
Unflattering punch perms.
I know, you're talking about, like, the setting in general.
Yeah. No, but I think people, you're saying make it gritty.
Well, yeah,
but I think people, like, because Cyberpunk and Blade Runner and that has such Japanese elements that people, I think, already attached a lot of dirt to Japan. My question was more specific. Like, what are, like specific things, like if you can like name drop, maybe perhaps they can go online and somebody could get that, and that actually might be quite interesting for them to.
I can't name
that,
drop
that they
anything,
could use in like their game.
But know? I kind of just thought of this now. I guess it's similar to what Chris just said. There seems to be a lot of kind of ignoring other people, but. Yeah, because you got to cram 50 people to, you know, a 2-foot by 2-foot space
in
a subway car. There is a lot of this sort of like wall around individual people where they sort of either choose not to notice or just don't notice things that are going on right in front of them.
Yeah.
And I've heard a lot of horror stories from students of things that have happened, and you know, nobody has done anything,
including themselves.
And obviously, I don't want to go into that, but that seems to be something that would set a setting apart from something like the States, where individual sort of strangers do at least take a more active role in things that happen around them. And here, it's a little bit more of just sort of, you know, keep your eyes down, mind your own business, and go.
It's like a defense mechanism.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's a defense mechanism to having so many people in such a small area.
Or when you look at like the. You know, the sliding rice paper doors and things like that.
Exactly.
And they actually don't keep any sound out. Or you can actually, if the light's strong enough, you can actually see through them.
Yeah.
They're not common. They're not everywhere.
No,
but just that mentality.
Yeah, that kind of shoji
like,
paper culture where you have sort of been trained to ignore things that do not directly involve you, either for the privacy of other people or whatever. So.
Yeah, I wrote down the same thing. I agreed.
Oh, all right.
Idea,
yeah.
Especially like because I said I was interested in running a vampire game here. Like, that's part of, you know, this vampires could be so much more open because people just walk.
Yeah, that's true. And I'll say it'd be a lot easier for vampires to feed because of all the people who sit in their cars outside at night.
Exactly. So you could be doing like, is it called True Blood?
The one where vampires are.
Yeah, which hasn't come to cable yet.
No.
I'm a little archaic. I don't go online to watch my shows. But the True Blood. So, I mean, you could have like something like that with that twist and that people don't really want to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
So it's actually going around or they're much more open. They're like they aren't True Blood, but there's no debate on, you know, they try to ignore that they exist or whatever. And if people...
Yeah,
they do these things, then we just pretend it didn't happen.
Exactly. I think there's a lot more pretend it didn't, doesn't,
dependence
or isn't happening.
And, you know, people, you know, go berserk or some of them do and cause these problems. It's not a problem. You know, that's not something that, you know, that was an isolated case and things like that. And, you know, society ignores that and what would happen and things like that.
No,
well,
yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah, I could see something like that. How would you use, what do you think?
Like a specific place?
No, like just something Japanese. That's pretty broad. So something Japanese that you think you could throw out there that somebody could add to a game. You got your dirt.
Well, I think that was that wasn't like one of these sort of played out stereotypes that most of Western culture knows. Like, how do you make something or a game or a setting Japanese without dropping in a ninja or a samurai, or saying, oh, you know, here... I mean, I guess you could drop it in, like, a temple, but I took it to be more sort of outside-of-the-box kind of thing.
But, you know, something like... I mentioned Kiyomizu Temple, but, you know, also the... When you go to some of those temples in Kyoto, and I'm sure, maybe other places as well, like all that moss and stuff like that. And I think when people, like, trying to... Maybe, like, a fantasy world or whatever, like, to, like, just, again, you're porting the image... you're porting the sensation, you know, the how it feels and things like that. And then you can, I think that can really like open up that world where it's not like the Tolkien-esque world. You have a lot of wood structures and things like that. And it's kind of growing into the forest in a different way than people might imagine with these, you know, tree houses with the elves. That you get like Rivendell and things like that. So I think like a lot of, if you like Googled Kyoto temples and just even just looked at the images, and I think that can really drive like a really fascinating fantasy world that doesn't need to have any samurai.
You could probably Google Japanese gardens too.
Yeah.
So or just the name.
Less
of
so. Less
or,
so.
Yeah, just
I'm not that into Japanese gardens.
No, but
whenever
I'm
go to a temple though,
yeah.
I'll always get like a map. Just because I think that's pretty cool to have like just maps and stuff like that, and I think it less so like if you go to a church, you get a map of a church. It's kind of got a pretty similar layout.
Yeah.
Whereas the temple is kind of like a lot of it is outdoors, so I think that's quite interesting and things like that.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't interrupt you. Yeah.
You guys didn't interrupt anything really, but okay. Fantasy world, huh?
Well, it doesn't have to be fantasy. It could be anything.
Well, I don't know if people don't want all that samurai stuff. I guess they could like look at the Meiji era. That's like a pretty interesting time period, I suppose. That might be.
Do tell us.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Could you explain why so we don't have to Google it?
You mean like the Meiji transition?
Yeah. Because I mean, you've got like all these like different factions. You've got like former like samurais who used to be top dogs who weren't quite the top dogs anymore. Then you've got all the guys who kind of want to return to the old ways, the guys who want to like embrace Western culture. You've got Western culture itself. It's,
if anybody's seen the
Last
Samurai at Tom Cruise, that's what that story was taking place.
And more subtly, in the Kurosawa Akira movies, where you watch like even like well the famous one, Seven Samurai, is that like all of these guys were the top dogs, but like when the Tokugawa family took over. And, you know, put all those rules and that. They impoverished a lot of samurai. Mm-hmm. So they have the status, but they don't have the money. But of course, there's parallels in other countries. Like, you see, like, you know, England, when the merchant class started to surpass the gentry in affluence and stuff like that. But I think it's neat, because David Brin, he's a science fiction author. Mm-hmm. He was asked which group of people he thought would be the best at adapting to space, and he said the Japanese, because they managed to take parts of other cultures and incorporate it into their own culture while keeping as much of their culture as they want. So they're very good at picking and choosing cultural elements. And you think of like some foods that people would think that's Japanese food, and they got that from Portugal, but they've made it so much a part of their own culture that it seems seamless. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that adaptability. And the Meiji era is kind of like, yeah, every time you adapt, there's still going to be like that little fluctuation and still some chafing and things like that, which like The Last Samurai brings out in a very dramatic fashion. but they were adapting. And then they, in a very short period of time, mm-hmm. they ended up beating Russia in a naval battle, a naval engagement, which is the first time I think like an Asian country had beaten a European country. In the modern world, since the Mongolians and stuff like that. So yeah, that's quite interesting. Like you could pretty much plug fantasy, present, future, and just like that point in time where you have a very adaptable society, and right now it's in that process of adapting. Mm. In that,
you could even kind of do the point like before that point where you have like an isolated group.
Building up to it, you mean?
No, yeah, sort of building up to it, like...
That could be the party, yeah.
Well,
they see the future. The future is not this samurai, this feudal system. The future was trying to westernize, for lack of a better word.
You could definitely do that.
Be the party in Japan, but not samurai?
No.
During that period?
We weren't saying a party in Japan. We were saying the party realizes that way X is what's going to happen. They're trying to institute that change. In any setting, it could be. Or I wasn't thinking like party level. I was thinking more like the setting is some small, isolated area, space station, island, city, whatever, that has recently sort of been opened to foreigners. Not just the foreigners, but anything.
Oh, like,
and there's an influence of...
Well, like Kobe.
Yeah, there's
or
an
Yokohama
influ-
or something.
There's an influx of outside... Or foreign culture,
yeah,
coming into this once relatively isolated area.
Be interesting in a sci-fi game with aliens being the foreign
culture.
Well,
exactly. You could do it sci-fi. You could do it fantasy. I mean, all the fantasy races. You could do it.
Yeah, they have the district, the foreign district, and things like that.
District 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I think you'll come up with a little bit more, a little better than people eating cat food and stuff like that.
I hadn't meant it like that, but
yeah.
I mean, you could sort of port.
I will
that
not
to
play
you.
A game where we have to eat cat food. Just like, throwing it out there.
Man, Cadillac the Dinosaur is out.
No. Oh, really?
No.
I know we have to use like dinosaur poop for our Cadillac.
That's if I give you one. But no, you could kind of put that idea in any setting.
Yeah.
Any genre. No.
All right, we're at what hour?
All right. Well, yeah. Guys, time flew until we heard about Toys R Us. So for our next episode, we're gonna be talking about character creation. It's I got your backstory. So we have a little less of a Japanese theme. So hopefully you'll tune in for that next week. Yeah.
We hope to see you then. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye. See you.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.